Welcome to Move Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Clapson. The aim of this podcast is to explore, learn, and spread the message of rewilding and natural movement so that we as humans can live in more alignment with our nature and reclaim what it means to be fully alive. The modern world has stripped away so much that used to nourish our mind, body, and soul. This podcast will help illuminate how we can reclaim and restore our innate, wild, capable, and strong spirit. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Move Wild Podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. So today, I have the pleasure of sharing a conversation I had and recorded with Anders Clausen. So Anders is the founder of and trainer at Urkraft Ørlslid. He is also an artist under the name of Earl's Blood. He is a MoveNat Level 2 certified trainer, and he participated in Level 3 certification in 2019, and he is still working on passing the final tests. Before Anders got into MoveNat in 2018, he had been practicing capoeira, parkour, calisthenics, aikido, Wing Chun, plain fitness training, and CrossFit. In 2015, he did a bachelor's degree on the subject of how humans are originally designed to learn, which brought him 50,000 years back in time. Since then, he has incorporated that perspective and used it as a holistic compass in his mind when searching for answers on problems in modern day life. Since then, he has always tended towards searching back for answers 50,000 years ago, asking himself how were we originally designed to function and how that fits into the current context, situation, or challenge. As he discovered MoveNat, he found his way back to the physical aspects of those exact questions. In the fall of 2014, Anders visited Bergen in Norway, where the spiritual aspects of his rewilding process were founded in the early morning on a mountain called Ørriken. For as long as he can remember, he has been attracted to peoples who practice nature-based spirituality and religion, their views, their ways, and their cultures. On the mountain of Ørriken, he found the final piece he needed to link together with his Nordic Scandinavian nature-based spirituality and way of life, a connection which has been a central part of his physical and mental training and health ever since. Today he teaches in a Danish public school and trains people in the practice of natural movement in Copenhagen, Denmark. This is an awesome conversation, and I'm really excited to jump into it and see what you guys think. One more thing before we jump into the conversation is, I know that I mentioned on the last couple of podcasts that my book, How to Thrive in the Modern World, is now finished and will be coming out on October 1st. And if you guys want to get early access to a copy of that book, then you can listen in after the show for how to do that. But for now, let's jump into today's episode and interview with Anders, and catch me after the show for how you can connect with him and how you can connect with me.
Right. Well, yeah, thanks, Anders, for coming on the podcast and joining me here today.
Thank you very much. I am so honored for being here, and yeah, I look very much forward to this chat.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. So I always like to start with kind of the backstory of my guests. So if you could share kind of how you got into natural movement and what you do today and what that journey has looked like for you.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of is a lifelong story, which I guess I had the first seeds sown in me as a child. I've been traveling the forests of Sweden, not voluntarily, but with my parents since I was 2 months old. And it was like in every school holiday there was, and we have quite a lot in Scandinavia. It was always to Sweden and out in the forests. I haven't been to Stockholm, for instance, the capital of Sweden, until I was a very grown-up man and made my own decisions. It was always out in the forests. So I think that at that point, I was kind of affected by the passion and the relations to the natural environments, especially in Sweden, which also has been affecting my kind of demand to when are you in a natural environment. In Denmark, we do not have much wild nature. And I can feel that very often when I then seek into nature, that I'm always a little unsatisfied. That first, when I come to the Swedish forests, I actually feel in complete peace. There, I kind of feel right.
Yeah.
But then at some point, you know, in teenage age, I think 16 years old, I kind of made this natural, what do you call it, a revolt against the ways of the parents. And suddenly I was not going anywhere near nature or Sweden, and were just searching to the capital of Denmark, Copenhagen, and becoming a very urban kind of person.
Yeah.
Living the life of a musician, playing music mainly, and only working when necessary with real jobs. It was a very tough life. It was a very funny life, but for the body and mind, it was very hardcore. And then with, I think I was like 25 years old, I suddenly, I kind of stopped being in the musical scene, and I moved to Berlin at that point. And I needed kind of a substitute for, you know, when you fill your life with something as big as music and creating music.
Yeah.
You suddenly, when that is not being taken away from you, but when you don't have it anymore, you kind of have to fill it with something else.
Yeah.
Unless you're kind of no one, you lose your identity, kind of, because creating music is just such a big part of your life when you do it.
Yeah.
And then I started to move. And it was like kind of you're running, because with 25, you're actually genetically, as a man, you're kind of peaking on your physical abilities.
Yeah.
And there I actually started to move for the first time, started to try out this whole thing with working out and not just jumping around like a madman, which I used to as a musician. And it was from day one, natural for me to search outside. I always felt very, very uncomfortable in fitness centers, in gyms. It was like, you know, you have these dreams where you go to school or work and suddenly realize that I didn't put any clothes on. And you stand butt naked in front of your boss and we're actually going to have a promotion. I feel like that when I walk into a gym. And even a few years later, where I made my first education in the area of fitness and health, I felt horrible when I was in a gym. I made a fitness instructor in education. It's like, you know, that's where you kind of start when you don't go through the university kind of line, but, you know, want to do it a little on the side.
Yeah.
Going forward a good amount of years, I kept on dealing with, you know, calisthenics outside, parkour, but always on my own and outside.
Yeah.
And at some point I start to make teacher's education back in Copenhagen. And in the end of that, I am writing a bachelor. I don't know, is that the word in English? Like academic assignment?
Yeah, a bachelor's degree. Yeah.
A bachelor's
degree. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And In that, I was ending up on the subject on how human beings are actually created to learn.
Yeah.
Contra the way we are trying to teach children in classrooms today, by sitting still on their asses and listening and receiving information for, in Copenhagen, 45 minutes in a row.
Yeah.
And if you have a double lecture, it's, double up. And that was really, really eye-opening for me. And I think it's been like a passion or interest which has been lying in deep down in the back of my head for many years. And it was very fulfilling to sit down and really find some theoretics on the subject. And it kind of built my foundation on the whole perspective of how are we actually supposed to function as human beings. So after writing this assignment, I kind of had this new compass in life, and I started to navigate almost in everything, like, okay, you have these and these problems. Have you asked yourself, how are you supposed to?
Yeah.
Function, or how are you actually? Did you just go back 50,000 years and compare how was the world back then? Because the thing I realized doing one of the first realizations I had doing this work with my bachelor's degree was that the evolution of the human organism takes around 50,000 years to adapt to new situations. Which means that we are practically today still hunter-gatherers. And the main design today of the human being, or human organism, is kind of tuned into to function in a way different, both society, but also environment.
Yeah.
Than we actually are. And that's very interesting to look at when you look at all these the diseases we are struggling with today, especially the mental diseases. Large amounts of suicides, which you can say is caused by mental diseases, or yeah, maybe it's actually just loneliness, and a lot of you can't generalize something like that, but it was definitely becoming a way of looking on life to write that assignment. And around, I think, a few months before that, I was being given what you call it, a scholarship, I think.
Yeah.
To go to Bergen in Norway.
Yeah.
Which is this, I think, one of the most beautiful cities I have ever seen. Where the first morning there, we came in the afternoon, and I knew there was, you don't call it mountains, it's like it's a small mountain, and you call it fjell in Danish or Norwegian. And I knew that there was this mountain above the place I was living, and I decided that I wanted to get up in the first morning and run this mountain, because I had been doing research before going there. And I saw that there was like this yearly race where people are apparently running up this mountain. So I had this idea that there's this fine little path, urban boy, and that you could just kind of stroll up that mountain and have a nice view in the morning and come down to school and tell everybody I ran up the mountain this morning.
Yeah.
So I got up like 5 a.m. because the classes were starting like 8 o'clock and I had to climb a mountain, so I was a little bit And oh yeah, a point that got lost there, the whole workshop, which I got this special ticket for, were about Northern mythology.
Oh wow.
Through, seen through a perspective of a lot of creative eyes, like music and dance and theater and art, like all the classes, all the creative classes you have in school. And the very interesting part about it for me was that it was not like North mythology, like Thor and Odin and all the gods, because that had just been like, nah, all right, yeah, that's kind of a known thing. But it was about all the folk belief, all the creatures in nature,
right?
Which what do you call it? This superstitious beliefs, or yeah, maybe it was later called superstitious. Back then, it was just reality, you know.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to dive into all these creatures of nature, and that was just so eye-opening and amazing for me, because I, at that point, only had the relations to my own culture, historical aspects, as being a little kind of biker related. The whole Odin and Thor, and when I met the Northern gods, it was always a little in that relation to bikers or rockers, or I couldn't really take it serious, you know. And I didn't really want to be associated with it.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I always found the history classes, learning about our hunter-gathering time, the Stone Age, it's called in Denmark, and Viking Age, and all these stories and tales, I found it amazing. But there was kind of the wrong people having like a monopoly on using that culture and heritage. At the same time, we had some problems, which I think it has really been changing a lot through the years, or lately. There was this dude called Adolf somewhere in Germany 80 years ago, who kind of raped everybody's cultures he could get his hands on, and misused a lot of symbolism, which I've kind of been stigmatizing, I don't know what you call it. A lot of the Northern symbolics and symbolisms and signs and the whole rune alphabet. Kind of a bad taste, or can have in the eyes of some people who do not know any better with justice, you know, because we only know what we know. And when a guy like Adolf Hitler, he kind of uses a culture in that amount that he did, he kind of gets the monopoly. Because he's just the one who used it in the biggest amount of historical impact, if you can call it like that, you know. And there are still morons today running around and misusing that culture, that culture history from Scandinavia, which is really sad. But at the same time, there are happening a lot of, I find, what do you call it? There's a lot of waves in the opposite direction. The whole information about the whole Viking culture and era has been really exploding the last couple of years. And I think that has a very positive and healthy impact on everything related to Scandinavian cultures. Anyway, that's in Bergen. I'm on my way up a mountain and I'm already full of expectations because I kind of had a realization in the preparing for this course I was in. So I was like, I was psyched on expectations. And I already had this feeling a little of finding my way home in some aspects of life. In this case, finding my way home in my own culture. I have always been searching to North American cultures and Mesoamerican, the Aztecs, the Mayans, the Incas, and in North America, the Iroquois nations, and really digging deep into the nature religions.
Yeah.
And preparing for this course in Bergen, I found out through a meeting the band or a music group called Vatruna. I suddenly realized patterns in the music which were extremely similar to other contemporary cultures. The whole use of rhythm, very simple, very trance, earth-giving kind of. I practiced capoeira earlier and had some associations from back then, and lying by a river at some point, I heard the same rhythm of a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And I started doing some research after listening to Vatruna and kind of found out that on a big belt on the northern hemisphere, the musical culture looked extremely much the same.
Wow. That's interesting. That's fascinating.
That's totally fascinating, and as I came to the conclusion that it had to be because we have all been listening to the same source, the same origin, which I spoke about in my last post. The first sound we hear at all is the heartbeat of our mother. That's the first song of all we are listening to, and through that there will be established an idea, something to listen for in life or after.
And some sort of familiarity to look for, like exactly. Some sort of rhythm. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly that rhythm you do find in nature if you listen carefully.
Yeah.
And suddenly the whole thing of nature religion across the northern hemisphere also came together because they were so similar to each other all around the globe. And it kind of suddenly makes sense that you look on nature and put spirituality, you give it life, you give it respect, because you know that heartbeat which your mother was kind of carrying, you hear that as well in nature.
Yeah, and you see the aliveness of nature.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. So from being a kind of an adopted child in the nature religions in Northern and Mesoamerica, I before going to Bergen suddenly had this release of kind of thinking I'm going home. I'm on the right direction. I found a key to a door into my own culture.
Yeah,
a place where I felt right, because I felt misplaced all these years. So I'm. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. It's dark as the darkest, and I'm running up this mountain, and I suddenly realize that there is no nice path. This run is for Norwegian madmen, or just Norwegians. You must be really, really, really physical, fit, and capable, because they are running up this mountain. And I kind of took like the last kilometer. They run from down, the race starts at the center of the city, and they race all the way up.
Wow.
And it's like, I think, 6 kilometers, but yeah, people think that 6 kilometers run, that's nothing, but it's up a mountain.
Yeah.
So that is really something. And running up there in the darkness, I experienced fear of nature. That was one of my first reactions, because I couldn't see anything. And there was no path. It was stony and rocky, and I had my little sweet five-finger shoes on, because it was like the street version, which had barely nothing to, you know, hold the grip when walking on a mountain.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I was heading into. And one of my first thoughts were like, wolves. I can't see them, and I was, but I kept on running, because I had this goal of getting on top of the mountain. And as I ran up the mountain, suddenly it was also cold and wet, but it was like late summer. It was not supposed to be like that in my idea of my comfortable little roller band mountain hike here. But it was like melting water from the top of the mountain running down the path, which was actually the only thing creating this path.
Wow.
So I think within 20 minutes, I was freezing cold and out of breath like I'd never been before, because in some way I mastered to keep on going. I accepted that, okay, this run will be extremely slow, but I kept on the pattern of a run. So I didn't just stop and walk.
Yeah, you just kept that momentum going.
Exactly, yeah, and the movement, because I'm sure I've been looking ridiculous, because I was moving so slow. It was really just walking. But you know the difference between jogging and walking. You might as well. I use it for my when I teach kids as well, who are out of breath.
Yeah.
Okay. Try, instead of start walking, stay in the same pattern.
Yeah.
Try to keep jogging, because you will kind of activate the muscle and joints and moving pattern, which you will need for the run in the long run.
Yeah.
So instead of kind of changing your moving pattern to walking, which is very different, you suddenly start with a heel stride instead of a front foot stride. You kind of, even though you're out of breath and can't run anymore, you can keep on.
Yeah, same pattern, just keep going. Your
body, the pattern, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm climbing this mountain, and it everything around me turns from black as hell to the most beautiful sunset in the most magnificent nature I have ever been, and this whole introduction to this course. And my whole feeling of returning home in some kind of aspect due to my cultural history and relation, just came together in this one big, massive, beautiful sunset, and the view from the top of a mountain, the exhaustion from running up the mountain. So there was like both these physical impacts where I was completely exhausted, and then these the views, the audiotive impacts from wind and the few birds, also the silence. It was just overwhelming, and I guess it was kind of a revelation on that mountain where a new path were kind of digged, and I chose up on that mountain my bachelor's degree, the direction for that.
Wow.
And I kind of accepted at that moment my cultural inheritance, which I had been avoiding for many years, which had made me kind of a refugee in my own culture, or stranger, maybe.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, and yeah, the crazy thing is then that on my way down, because I'm sure if I had been as trained in barefoot running as I am today, I had not been having this accident, and I had been going up the mountain barefoot, of course. Now I had these little slippery five fingers on.
Yeah.
On the way down, I'm also running down, and I'm a little in a under time pressure. I step on a stone, which is I don't know how to explain it, but it was not standing flat like a nice step on a stone.
Unstable, I guess.
It was unstable, yeah, and my foot kind of slides out to the left, and there's another stone standing like an arrowhead or a spearhead, and it's cutting open my left ankle.
Wow.
And at the same time, because of the unstable stone, I am spraining my ankle.
Wow.
That's and it was like, you know, when you do something that you know was really stupid, like I guess in Australia, putting on your cowboy boots without checking for scorpions or snakes or whatever. Get stung a bit and you just, I knew I should have been checking my boots or whatever, you know. Yeah, it's just, man, everything was right. You were just in the moment, and now you messed it up.
Yeah.
And it's not quite well, or it's not quite good to be on a mountain on your own without a cell phone.
No.
And nobody knew I was there because it was my project, you know. Yeah. It couldn't be more stupid, kind of. But at the same time, it became my first. You know, we can't control our situations. We can only control how we deal with our situation.
Yeah.
This kind of became my first, in my own head, my first manhood test in, okay, I chose now to start walking a path of very, very gritty and strong and mindfully capable human beings, women as men in the Scandinavian culture were strong as hell. And now I stood there with a bleeding ankle, with a cut from the bottom to the top of the ankle, quite rigid because it was from a stone. It was not a nice cut from a knife.
Yeah.
And I could feel that something was really wrong. But I knew I had to get down. So I chose to ignore the pain and I kept running.
Yeah.
And it actually became one of the greatest runs I've ever made.
Oh, wow.
And I came into this state where I was just not getting out of breath. I came into this state of kind of a meditative state in the end, where I think I could just have been running until I passed out, because there was not the natural, okay, now it's enough, now I can't go on anymore. It was gone, combined with a lot of pain from the accident.
Was that because there wasn't an option for you to stop? It was just like in your mind, it was just, I have to keep going. So your body kind of...
That was the first step. That was the first step.
Yeah.
I have to get down from here. And I also, I had an idea that if I did not act right now, I might not be able to do it later. If I kind of went into the pain and into the injury and acknowledged it and accepted it, it would take over my perspective of reality. That was not how I was thinking.
Yeah.
But that's how I would describe it now.
Yeah, interesting.
In a distance. And then along the way in this run down towards the hostel I was living in, I came in a state of trance, and not like with the eyes rolling around in the head and the tongue hanging out the mouth and saying weird sounds, but my consciousness was in a completely different place than I had ever been.
Yeah.
Like being on some kind of ecological, natural, psychedelic, without being dizzy, but just being superhuman, kind of.
Yeah, in the zone.
I didn't feel pain. I didn't feel exhaustion.
Yeah.
I was just above everything, and I felt like running on the wind.
Yeah.
And that was a very, very powerful. Experience to have after living at that point 26 years in a mostly urban, normal, not spiritual, not magical society life, you know.
Yeah.
So it was in a short time a lot of realization, connecting me very strongly to spirituality and nature and a whole new path in life, kind of.
Interesting. That's an amazing experience, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was definitely digging the first groove for my future path in life. And it was not like I was then going totally, all nature boy, moving out in the forests and running around and hugging the trees and praising Odin and all these things. It's been a very, very slow process, and I have been very conscious about actually not following books and experiences of others, but kind of making my own experiences, and been very focused on the whole observing and being mindful in nature. I started then again doing holidays with my family out in the Swedish wilderness, and kind of returning a bit more to my roots of being in nature. And then like two, three years ago, I discovered MoveNet. And the whole approach to human natural movement, which Evan LeCour have been kind of not kind of describing, but describing and kind of categorizing, So it's being able to access from a kind of a academic stand of a point of view. It kind of wrapped up the physical aspects of the spiritual journey. I started in Bergen or in that area of time, and my academic journey, which was doing my bachelor degrees assignment, where I explored the whole elements of how are we actually supposed to learn. And now I then meet Evan DeCore, who are in such a degree working the exact same area, but not how are we supposed to learn, how are we supposed to move. So suddenly I have like this unity of the three aspects of life, which have been very important for human beings since ever: the spirituality, the intellectuality, and the physicality.
Interesting.
And I remember at some point I had this revelation of thought in my head. I think I've been practicing MoveNet for a year at that point. This sentence came up in my head that I feel like my body finally finding its way home.
Yeah, I love that.
And it was, through MoveNet and my MoveNet practice, because it also makes you, when you start to move in certain ways physically, you at the same time start to, you begin to, okay, I have to make it a little simpler. You have to see, you start to see or look at the world in another way.
Yeah.
And the whole way you kind of, I'm missing one word, it's really irritating.
The whole way you perceive the world or see the world.
Yes, but you know, you're in an interaction. You kind of feel, see, listen, hear. All the emotional aspects of when you exist in a room, it changes.
Yeah,
and depending on which room you are, if it's a forest, if it's a urban environment, if it's at the beach, if it's it constantly changes. But the main change here is the consciousness about how you are able to move your body physically in that environment. And by that, I guess this revelation of finding my body finding my way home in itself kind of grew. I've been practicing CrossFit quite focused for 2 years before I started practicing MoveNet, and I really, really liked it. I really, really stuck with it. But I still really liked it.
Yeah.
Like the whole blood and guts kind of way of being.
Yeah, the culture.
Both the culture, but also that state of mind which you can in while doing a workout.
Yeah.
The whole thing with as many reps as possible. In a certain amount of time, or as many rounds as possible, or whatever.
Yeah.
This kind of warrior mode your brain kind of turned into. Come on. The first one woke up. but it after 2 years, I had to have a break because I injured my shoulder.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's I'm a single story there. A lot of people start in the beginning of the 30s doing CrossFit, and first of all, it feels amazing.
Yeah.
And you see all these superhumans participating in the CrossFit Games.
Yeah.
Who, first of all, they have been doing it since either since CrossFit started back in 2009 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or they've been doing it since they were like 14 years old.
Yeah.
And you start to compare with these people, and you press yourself beyond your limits,
right?
And you end up injured because, in the eyes of nature, you're actually already old.
Yeah.
the man's physical ability kind of peaks with 25. From yeah. there. We are like
declining, yeah.
decreasing in capability. So the whole idea of starting out in the 30s when we have our first midlife crisis, oh, I'm getting old and fat.
Yeah.
I have to start something insane. I do CrossFit.
Yeah.
No, I have to make a difference. That's kind of the idea. But you get hooked on it, and it's dangerous because it is. The whole feeling combined with the exercises you are doing in CrossFit makes it dangerous if you do not have the proper
you don't have the foundation, almost like the physical foundation,
but also somebody who are brave enough to say, dude, your shoulders are not ready to snatch, but I want to snatch like everybody else. Yeah, but you're not ready. You're not mobile enough. If you do, you can do it. But in 2 months, you will have an injury that will maybe last for 2 years, maybe for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But it became an industry, at least in Scandinavia. I know that in America, the CrossFit boxes are very different. And I think they are much more built on community. And I think maybe... it's all speculations because I was not there, but I was in a Danish gym, a CrossFit box, sorry, and there it's very much like, you know, if you take a spinning class or yeah. you take an aerobic class or a tighten your butt class or whatever, it's
yeah.
a lot of people at the same time. Yeah, we go in the same club. We saw each other before, and the coach also saw me before, but yeah. he still wants me to just come
yeah.
and do the job because he is a part of an affiliate.
Yeah.
So they don't really have the possibility to say, hey, stop.
Right.
You should take out a month focusing on mobility first.
Yeah.
Then see how it goes. Their intro classes, instead of that, are like, that's a kettlebell, that's a barbell, now make 100 burpees. Oh, and a burpee, you just get down and up.
Yeah.
That's like, it has injuries written all over.
Yeah.
Except if you're like 18-year-old. Or young woman or man, just you are able to throw everything at 18-year-olds, you know, they're just on top of their machine.
Yeah.
And then I got my injury. I started to squat a lot because I couldn't lift my arm above hip height. yeah. Ikke lige nu, fordi at jeg bruger telefonen. Til at lave internet. Så lige om lidt, okay? And I think I started just to look around, and I found MoveNet, and like many others, it was like, It was YouTube. Yeah, child number two. I just found some clips on YouTube.
Yeah.
And thought, that looks interesting.
Yeah.
And honestly, at the same time, I thought, but it also looks a little boring, because I was still, you know, I was coming out of this CrossFit scene where everything was very raw, explosive, sunglasses. And it took me a long while to kind of get into MoveNet, even after signing up for my level one certification. I had a hard time finding the same aspects which I found in CrossFit. I missed CrossFit like hell because of this whole war zone mentality you get into when you are just pushing and pushing and pushing.
Yeah.
And suddenly somebody told me to slow down and focus on being efficient. And the movements you saw, Danny Clark or Evan LaCour or Jerome doing, and Kellen, there's so many guys in MoveNet who are just, they are moving so gracefully, and it kind of looks boring because you can't see how hard it is for them. It's not hard for them because they are just top tuned.
Yeah,
you know,
totally. They make it look effortless almost. When I watch like Erwan move or on videos and stuff, it's like it looks so effortless. But then when I try and do it, I'm like, that's hard.
it's definitely and watching them move so effortless with this poker face, especially Erwan.
Yeah,
he just has this poker face on. You know, you can't see any. Emotions. He runs up a mountain and his face is the same, you know. I promise you, when I ran up my mountain, my face was like turned inside out. It was definitely not an Erwan poker face.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to again create my own experiences with MoveNet to kind of find out that, whoa, this really, really holds challenges on such many levels.
Yeah,
I have never experienced something as challenging as the challenges I can find or create through my knowledge of MoveNet today.
Yeah.
Kan du ikke vente lidt? Gå og spise noget mad. Så tag en banan, tag noget frugt. Så laver jeg morgenmad, når jeg er færdig med at snakke. Den er oppe i skabet, tror jeg. Længst til højre. Ja, but prøv lige at høre, jeg er i en samtale, så du må lige vende. Ja, men Marley, det må lige vende, okay? Jo mere du forstyrrer, jo længere tager jeg samtalen. Kaya, can you invite Mali man?
Yeah.
One moment, I just have to help. Perfect. They helped me. I had my legs, I stayed too long in one position. When you talk, you forget about everything else.
Yeah, totally.
No, but I just remember that it was very hard for me to take on MoveNet and find this the aspects which I loved so much from CrossFit, but especially in my level one certification, Jerome, he made like a very, very simple combo containing of foot and hand crawl, a little walk, and then reverse foot and hand crawl, and then some balancing just for kind of, you know, catching the breath again.
Yeah.
And I was the assistant trainer, Michel. He was also participating in this combo, and he was also a CrossFitter.
Yeah,
and we kind of very quickly found this whole CrossFit competition mentality in this combo.
Yeah. And
at that point, I realized that, of course, this whole mentality in CrossFit that can be put into everything else which you're doing.
Yeah.
And actually, what drawn me towards CrossFit was my connection to my roots of culture and the whole grind and toughness.
Yeah.
Grinding and toughness. And suddenly I found the connection, or realized that, of course, this can be in every aspect of life. It doesn't even have to be in a workout, also just in your approach to challenges and problems in life, to bite your teeth together and just never back down, never drop a knee.
Yeah.
Just moving forward. And at the same time, having fun with it because of the love of this state of mind. I remember I had this when competing with Misha, who is a very physically fit trainer and coach from Netherlands.
Yeah.
And I kind of came one step deeper into MoveNet and accepting MoveNet as my path of physical practice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Because, yeah, it kind of, I saw myself again at a stage deeper or level deeper.
Yeah. I love that. And just applying that mindset to MoveNet, it didn't have to be a CrossFit thing. It could just be throughout all your life. I really like that point.
Definitely. And I, that kind of starts very simply. The whole breathing that we are working on when starting out practicing MoveNet or teaching MoveNet, that breathing is one of the first things we teach. And it's not like we teach a way of breathing for when you are moving or training only. Mm-hmm. We teach a way of breathing for life.
Yeah.
If you constantly breathing in a certain way, you will meet oceans of people today in modern society who are not able to breathe. Just they are breathing this superficial breathing where they never, they're not even able to take a deep breath because they are so tied up in their whole core.
Yeah.
And breathing muscles because of stress and other outside pressures and bad habits. So that's kind of where we start to make a foundation of being able to breathe.
Yeah, I love it.
And not only while training, but while living, you know. And that kind of becomes a symbol of MoveNet, I find, in a broad perspective, that MoveNet is not only for a 45 minutes training session every second day. It's kind of for a way of living. Jerome used to tell this or answer this question. You know, you have to drink 2 liters of water throughout a day. So how do you do it? Do you drink a glass of water from time to time throughout the day? Or do you go through your whole working day, you're thirsty, but you keep on going. And when you're done working your 8 hours, you go home and you drink 2 liters of water in one sip, you know. You don't do that. Your body would collapse under that amount of water in such a short time.
Yeah.
So why do you move like that?
Yeah.
Why do you sit still the entire day? You get up out of your bed in the morning. You sit at your breakfast table you go to your car where you sit, or your bike where you actively sit, but you still sit.
Yeah.
Then you go to work where you sit, and there you might be as active as you go to the dinner, to the cantina, eat your lunch where you're sitting, back to sitting. Yeah. And if you are a very modern person, you hit the gym, 45 minutes, full power, and then you wonder that you get injured.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because you should actually move throughout the day.
Yeah.
Consistently, efficiently. You know?
Yeah, totally. That's interesting. And you've because of your, like, you've done a lot of research, and I know that you mentioned before, like, we are essentially wired for like 50,000 years ago, and there's a massive biological mismatch in the world that we live in today and what our bodies are actually designed for. What are some other things in the modern world that are big ones that you notice that are just massive mismatches that kind of cause people to get sick or get injured? Like, what, you know, movement is one of them, and as you mentioned, water as an example. Like, what are some other ones that you notice in the modern world that are just that cause us that kind of illness and disease?
I definitely suspect that the vast loss of rest is causing a lot of mental situations or even disease in the modern society. The constant bombardment from information, and I'm not talking about knowledge, I'm talking about information that should not be compared, because reality shows are basically information as well. The thing is that our 50,000-year-old brains are suckers, addicted to receiving information and knowledge, actually, because that is the key to survival for the human organism.
Yeah.
To be the cleverest animal in the forest.
Yeah.
To be able to create tools, traps, strategies, to work by memory and not only instinct. To learn by memory. To learn by the experiences of others. So our whole brain is tuned in to this big magnet of searching for knowledge. Like sugar, we want it because back in the days, 50,000 years ago, there was not much of it.
Yeah.
So when you could get your hands of honey, for instance, your body were like celebrating, because that is going to prepare us for winter. It's going to prepare you for the next hunt. You will be in plus of energy because you ate this sugar. Today, there's just sugar and everything. You know, if you drink a Coke or you put a ketchup on your fat fries, you eat the same amount of sugar because the ketchup is full of sugar as well.
Yeah.
But the problem is that we are being not any longer only offered or raised by the system to be constantly informed by electronics and AI. We are today, I dare to say, forced to use, at least in the Western world, we are forced to use AI and electronics to be a part of the society.
Yeah, totally.
The problem with that is that we are getting we are not getting the sufficient amount of rest cognitively. Our brains are under constant bombardment, and that means that we're constantly relating to new information. Very many people, the last thing they do in the evening is looking at their mobile phones. The first thing they do in the morning is looking at it. And it's not just to be this wholly boring teacher about you should not look at it. It's just really, really destroys the quality of your sleep. And that makes you sick.
Yeah.
It's a torture method to mess up with people's quality of sleep. You know, disturbing a sleeping person constantly, or making sure that in the person's rest, sleep, it is not really reaching a level of rest, will drive this person insane.
Yeah.
In the long run. And when you, first of all, going to bed way too late, and due to that are bombarded by blue light screen, what you call it?
Yeah, exactly,
the blue light. You sleep in a very not efficient way. And I'm sure that is a part of sicknesses we are only seeing the beginning of. It's interesting to look on the sicknesses in the modern society, how they are, you know, what kind of sicknesses we are dealing with, what are the biggest amount of sicknesses, what are the biggest causes of death. In the modern society, in my age, in men between 30 and 50 years old, in big amounts of the world, at least in the highly developed areas of the world, it's suicide.
Yeah.
That is the highest cause of death.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting, you know, when we live in a society where we, all of us have 3,000 friends at least, but we are very lonely, many of us.
When
we are surrounded by people, we don't even, I can't generalize, but we maybe don't even feel that we are fulfilled, or that we are seen, or that we belong.
Yeah, well, it's so hard to feel like we have a sense of belonging when most of our interaction is through technology. I was talking to that exact point that you mentioned the other day. It's like, it's kind of, we're kind of forced in the modern world to use these modern technologies. Like if I decided to not use my cell phone all of a sudden, like that cuts me off from pretty much everyone. Like I don't have a community around me to just talk to people. It's like, I literally have to function and do a lot of my social engaging through a technology, like this modern technological device. It's very interesting. And also very interesting that not many people kind of notice that, and how deficient we are in true human connection.
Yeah, definitely. It gets worse and worse. You know, you're not, I believe that you're unlearning to have a normal conversation, a normal small talk, a normal chit chat. We stand parents beside each other on playgrounds, and pushing our children on the swing, and we just kind of look the other way and show that the other person is not existing, or yeah. I'm not here. I'm just pushing my child on the swing.
Yeah,
not go into a conversation because I don't know what to do.
Yeah, people have lost that ability. They don't know how to connect. They don't know how to relate.
But the most frightening thing I find is actually that it's that could be a choice. You know, you could have the choice to say, okay, I'm going to create a community in the real world. I am going to practice this ability of still socializing. The most scary thing is that from sides of society and government, it's no longer possible to not use AI or electronics, because you have to use it for tax, you have to use it to log into your bank. Physical money is like very quickly disappearing. Now in the Corona days, it's like most of the shops, they're like, please do not pay with cash. They will be, I bet within 10 years or something, the cash, they are long gone and everything is going over your phone, the bank. And if we are lucky, we still have the credit cards. But I don't think, I believe that the whole system is being set more and more up on AI.
Yeah.
We are being kind of normalized into it. For instance, these, I have to be aware now to not name drop something that could destroy this. These watches.
Yeah.
Which you put on your arm, which connects you to your phone.
Yeah, yeah.
In the beginning, I thought, why? It makes no sense. I have the phone in my pocket.
Yeah.
But the thing that this watch is doing is making it normal to wear the AI on your body.
Yeah.
So at some point, it will not seem so crazy to, instead of having it on the skin, have it under the skin, because it's actually practical.
Yeah.
And suddenly have to, like, I have to have it in Denmark to log into my taxes. I have to have this electronic password, authentication code, all these things, you know, all electronic. If I do not use these things, I'm not a part of society.
Yeah.
In Sweden, they already started to implant chips into people.
Yeah.
With social numbers and things like that. So it's not really a madman theory anymore. It's like a way that we are going. And
yeah, it's freaking scary, eh? Like, to think about it. This is what I'm aiming to do with this podcast, is kind of use this medium and leverage it now so that I can create a community, so that I don't have to rely on a lot of these systems in the future. I see where a lot of it's going, and it freaks me out, to say the least.
Yeah, especially the moment where we go from having the choice to being forced.
Yeah, yeah. Where's that line? Where do we draw that line?
Because there is being worked on electronics which are able to accelerate your brain capacity or ability.
Right.
You know? So in that moment where the first guy, or where it gets normal to have this upgrade, you as a normal human being no longer have a chance on the job market.
Yeah. And you're now forced to have...
You're not a superhuman.
Yeah.
And when that becomes the new normal, that's where the problem kind of occurs, because then you can't really participate in society. Your choice is being taken from you, because you want to survive. You want to be able to pay your bills and provide for your children. And probably somebody listening to this will then say, what's this madman from Scandinavia talking about? But if you look at the Paralympics, we already have a case of people with amputees not being allowed to participate in the real Olympics, because their kind of state of cyborg, their or what you call it, their proteases are boosting the human capability in such a degree that a normal human has no chance to run against these sprinters with amputees.
Wow.
So suddenly you have to say to the people with amputees that you cannot participate in the normal Olympics, not because you have no chance,
yeah,
as it was earlier, but because the normal human beings, they have no physical chance to compete with you.
Yeah.
So that's on a physical level, but as soon as you have these mind boosting chips, as soon as they find the way to do the thing, it will put a demand on every human being in a matter of making a choice of, yeah, kind of being socially bullied into getting an implant in your body which will accelerate your capabilities,
yeah,
to be a part of normal society, to, yeah, be able to do what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I find, because then the choice is taken from you. Well, I just had to find some my computer's running out.
Yeah, that's fine.
So to your question earlier, what issues do I see except from lack of movement, lack of rest, lack of sleep, lack of good sleep, definitely. And this over bombardment from information.
It's interesting, and that I totally resonate with all the points that you made on AI. And for people listening who think that, you know, maybe what you're saying is crazy, it's like that's what's happening with cell phones, for example. Like, we are not in a overt way, but we have kind of been socially bullied into having cell phones. Like, I wouldn't be able to function, as I mentioned earlier, without a cell phone. And a lot of people who choose not to have a smartphone in the modern world are kind of socially inept, or so like considered not with the times. So that potentially could escalate and could totally happen with a lot of these technologies that you mentioned. It's real interesting stuff, man. I want to respect your time. How are you looking for time? Like, how much longer are you have to go for?
You're cutting everything together in the end, right? Or editing it?
Yeah, I'm gonna edit this. So I might turn it into two episodes if we go for quite a while. So
the girls, they are kind of taking care of themselves, so we can just keep on going.
Okay, I'll go for another 15 minutes, but I'd maybe love to record another interview at some point, because I feel like there's so much more to talk about.
Definitely.
Yeah. So a few other things that you mentioned in your story, coming back to your culture, how important do you think it is? Like, how important do you think it is for people to get in touch with their culture and their lineage? Because I know you mentioned that was a major part, but you running up that mountain and doing that course, connecting with your kind of Nordic heritage and that culture, how important do you think that is for people to at least understand their lineage and where they come from?
I think it varies a lot. And I'm very aware that many of my experiences of success, of finding home, as I describe it, both in my spirituality and in my body, is very individual and is needs that I personally have been having. Actually, I had to learn it from my oldest daughter not long ago, who told me that, you know, Dad, we just don't share the same preferences. I think I'm just in another place in my life. And she's like 12 years old, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, cool. And I know her preferences. It's like lying on her, she's not moving. She's looking a lot on her screen, on her telephone, and she's happy with that. And her preferences are music and social media and friends, of course. But what it made me realize is that a lot of other people feel fulfilled as well by what the modern society has to offer. They actually do not need those aspects of life, which I have found. So it's hard. I don't think I can generalize it, but for me, it has been like giving me an opportunity to live a more holistic life. It has been a natural development of the understanding of who I am as a human being and what I'm capable of. But it has also been like an anchor. It's of course, it's a narrative that you build up around yourself to know where you're coming from. It's like many clever people have been saying that you have to know where you come from to know where you're going. Mm. And I definitely feel that that has been a big, big gift for me to be able to throw an anchor in a heritage, in a cultural heritage, and kind of build my narrative on that instead of feeling this drifting homeless person, kind of feeling like a drift homeless person. I think it has made the difference. I think it gives me the opportunity to turn my back,
yeah,
in a larger degree to some of the things that I see being unhealthy in modern society, which others embrace fully, and that's their choice. And I will not stand like a holy man and say that, yeah, my way is the best way and it's the only way, it's just the right way for me.
Yeah.
And I would like to age with grace. And that kind of, now I'm heading towards my 40s faster than I would like to. And I think it becomes more than ever my mission of living like I do, to live with high quality as long as possible in life, to live and die moving. So when I pray and hope for that, when I take the ticket, it's either in a situation where I do something heroic for other people, or my heart just stops in the middle of a long jump or precision jump, or where I anyway feel like flying, and then I head off to Valhalla, or wherever we are going. But I would like, that's kind of my biggest mission with this whole approach to life that I'm living, to actually live with high quality. I don't want to be 90 or 100 years old and not being able to lift a spoon up to my mouth. Mm. I don't want to not be able to lift my daughters up for a hug, or they are active as well, and they break a bone from now and then, and I would like to be able to carry them when they then want to go outside. And I would like to be able to get up from the floor when I fall. I would like to be able to fall without dying from it.
Yeah.
And that's not even a joke. It's another high cause of death in modern society. People stumbling and falling, breaking a hip or breaking a upper leg bone, a femur, and not coming out from the hospital again. Yeah. They die from that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, I wouldn't say pathetic, but it's just sad.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's a sad way to go. I would like to go full on, head on, moving, having a plan for the next move in my head, for the next project. You know, it doesn't have to be physical movement. It can also just be moving forward in life, having projects, having plans and ideas, not just ending up standing still and
having a purpose, I guess.
What, come again?
Having a purpose, I guess.
Yeah, you could say that, definitely. For yourself, of course, for others as well, but you know, having a purpose for yourself is very much related to one of the biggest lacks in our society is having love for yourself, which I think it's even a, kind of a taboo in some awkward way, you know. If you ever being asked, so tell me the three people you love the most, if you would start out saying, well, me and my mom and dad, John and Jim, it was like, what? You selfish bastard, you love yourself the most? You should.
Yeah.
You should. Because when your mom and dad is gone, when Jim and John and Joe, or whatever your friends are called, when they're gone, when the world turns the back to you, if you don't love yourself, you have no love. And you will not be able to function well. But we are brought up to constantly search the love of others through likes on social media, or even in the school system, you know. You have to, if you don't do the assignments the way the teacher, and I'm a teacher, so I'm sorry, children. If you don't do the assignments the way the teacher think it should be done, you don't get the love, you don't get the appreciation, you don't get the thumbs up. So we are kind of being brought up to do certain things to win the love of our society or family or whatever. But we are not being brought up to love ourselves. That's never being spoken of. Yet it is so essentially that it can save your life, because many of these men I talked about earlier, now it's a statistic of men, I guess women are taking their own life as well, but it's the highest death, cause of death for men in my age, for instance, the suicide thing. Many might not have the ability to love themselves and do not feel loved by family, friends, society. The paradox lies within that if you are not able to love yourself, you are actually not able to receive love from others. It will just be like a clap on the shoulder, and you will continue searching for this acceptance, because we've been brought up like that. We are only good enough as long as we experience this acceptance from our society around us. And that might be something that we are designed to, as well as hunter-gatherers, because back then above all, if you were not useful for the tribe, for your society, you were not worth feeding, you know. So it might lie very deep in us, this mechanism, but back then you would also be have to be able to rely and trust on your own abilities, because you sometimes you would stand on a mountain with a cut up angle,
yeah,
and only have yourself to rely on, or you would have to, in a hunt, you were not always hunting in packs. Sometimes you were hunting on your own, so you had to be able to rely on yourself and your own skills. I don't think there was as much back clapping back then. It was just a common known thing that you have to do your part to be a part. And today we constantly search for these back clappings, these likes, and it is scientifically proven that it releases a hormone or something like that in our brains, which is a little like a fix, yeah, which gives us a short moment of ecstasy, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's hard to you know to fight against, because it's actually a part of our structure. But the first step is, in my mind, that you actually start to realize that it is okay to love yourself, and it's okay that you care about yourself. And I'm quite sure that this whole thing of finding a way back to my own heritage has been a part of a way into turning the focus over on me instead of on everybody else.
Yeah.
Of course there's everybody else, but I started to remember me.
Yeah.
In processes. And not only looking outwards. I've been very, very through life. I've been very focused on what is everybody doing. I always told myself I don't care what everybody thinks about me, but I was very focused on what are they doing?
Yeah.
How are they looking? How are they acting? And how should I react to be cool or accepted in relation to those mechanisms?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely it's a great of great importance for me also in relation to the whole mental health. It's been an eye-opener to find tools in your own culture which leads you on a path of nature, which, and that is really, really nice. In Danish universities, there are being published more and more studies about the positive effects on the human health from being in nature, from interacting in nature, from being active in nature. Nature is like the modern world is finally realizing what we all knew many years ago, when we didn't try to separate ourselves from nature. There's this old saying, you can't, it's not an old saying, but it's an old structure that you can't take, you can take man out of war, but you can't take war out of man or whatever. And at some point I started to say that, you know, you can take man out of nature, but you can't take nature out of man. Yeah. And kind of sums up my whole idea of that we can plant ourselves in these modern urban societies, and we can reject with all means that we are actually a part of nature. We can try to raise above it, raise above nature, and tell ourselves that we are the masters of the universe. We control everything. But in that moment where we cut down all the trees, for instance, we are the masters of shit, because they are granting us the gift of breathing.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard to understand for a modern human being, but it is as simple as that. You know, I am, my social media page on Instagram is called Urkraft, which actually it means like the creating powers of life, and I actually started more and more to have the view on trees as being one of the participants in what you could call Urkraft, the creating powers of life, because they are so essential as they are. And yet so underestimated or misunderstood.
Yeah.
You know, these trees, just chop them down. They will grow up again. Yeah, but they have a capability to a certain amount, and we are very skillful in destroying.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
the problem is the speed we are able to destroy with, you know, compared to the speed the nature is able to regenerate.
Yeah.
I definitely believe that nature will come again after we destroy everything. The problem is that we will die out before. And yeah, that kind of puts a lot of things in perspective.
I think that's a great way to end the show. Like what you shared just there is phenomenal. As I mentioned, I'd love to have you back on because I feel like there's so much more to talk about. So we'll have to line something up sometime in the future. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I'll link to all your social media stuff and your, like all the stuff you've got online in the show notes, so people can get in touch with you there. But yeah, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, me too. It's been awesome. And it'd be lovely to continue the chat at some other point. You had a lot of interesting questions on the sheet. So
yeah.
All right. Thank you all so much for tuning in to today's show. I really, really appreciate your listenership. So as we mentioned in the show, the links to connect with Anders are going to be down in the show notes. So if you guys want to go down there, connect with him, go and do that. Also, if you guys could take a screenshot of today's episode and share it on whatever social media platform you use, then that would be really appreciated. You can tag myself, you can tag Anders, and let us know your thoughts and what you thought of today's episode. So if you guys want to get early access, as I mentioned in the introduction to this episode, to my new book, How to Thrive in the Modern World, then you can head down to the show notes and go and sign up as a Move Wild member on my Patreon page, where you're going to get early access to the new book, as well as follow along natural movement workouts every week and exclusive content that I don't post anywhere else. So if you guys want to head down there and do that, otherwise the book is going to be launching on October 1st. I can't wait to get this book out to all of you. It's really exciting for me to have written this book and produced it and now to be finally launching it so soon. So I'm really, really excited for all of that. And again, if you want early access, head down to the show notes and sign up as a Move Wild member on Patreon. That is all from me for today, guys. So again, thank you all so much for listening to the show. I really appreciate your listenership. And yeah, keep doing all the good things. I'll catch you on the next episode of Move Wild Podcast coming out this Friday.